Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next hour, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. 7-0, you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send email messages at goforit.gant@gmail.com. That's goforit.gant@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by former NFL linebacker and now UFL linebacker, Ed Hartwell. That is the husband of Lisa Wu Hartwell, who was on the show last week. Ed's going to talk about the upcoming UFL championship game. I keep wanting to say USFL, but UFL championship game in Omaha, Nebraska. And that game will be Saturday, and it will air on the Versus Network. Check your local listings. But we're going to talk to Ed about that game, talk to Ed about the Housewives of Atlanta, and talk to Ed about some NFL news as well. So it should be good to talk to Ed and see what's going on with Ed Hartwell. And before we start the show, the Spectrum was demolished today. And I'd like to give a quick 10-second moment of silence to the Spectrum. An arena.
We're gonna waste 10 seconds on this, Paul?
An arena that has hosted numerous events. An arena that has meant so much to many people. Dr. J was on hand.
Oh God.
Bobby Jones was on hand.
Wow.
And a lot of people were on hand to see a building, a beautiful building.
Wow.
The Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, the Spectrum. I mean, it's just a beautiful building. It's a 43-year-old building, older than me, older than Jeremy, older than a lot of us here. The building was erected.
Does anyone care?
And first opened.
Does anyone
in September
care?
30th, 1967. And it's played host to many, many events.
Oh, my God.
It's a sad day when a great arena like this, when a great arena like this ends and it gets demolished and it's over. So let's take 10 seconds and have a moment of silence for the Spectrum.
And now let's get to the business at hand.
Man, that was long, Paul.
This past Sunday, it was a battle for supremacy in the NFC East, and Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles came out on top 27-17, a game that, if you watch, the Eagles could have really put away in the first half. If not in the first half, early second half. They had opportunities to put the game away, but they were getting field goals instead of touchdowns, a couple drops, which cost them. One, that big drop by Jason Avant in the end zone, I mean, it was right in his hands. All he had to do was close the hands and make the catch, but he missed it. And ultimately, Eagles scored a field goal there. And also, they had a blocked field goal as well. One of their field goals was blocked. So a lot of opportunities there for the Eagles in that football game to put it away, but they didn't. The Giants stuck around. The Giants made some plays. Eli Manning made some plays. The Giants took the lead 17-16, and then the Eagles came back with a big 50-yard run by LeSean McCoy that put the Eagles on top, and they got the two-point conversion, which put it up on top 24-17. And Eli Manning tripped over himself, basically, fumbled the football, and it was recovered by the Eagles, and the Eagles eventually was swallowed away with a field goal by David Akers, and they would win 27-17, and they would go on top of the NFC East, and now are 7-3 on top of the NFC East, and they forced Eli Manning into a lot of turnovers, three interceptions, five turnovers for the Giants total, and it definitely cost the Giants, and the Eagles, Mike Vick and the Eagles, they did enough, and they got the job done. And now they're on top of the NFC East. And right now, if you look at it, they go into Chicago next week, which is going to be a big football game right now. Chicago, the team that's also 7-3. And if you're the Eagles, this is the game you want to take. You want to take this game because you want that opportunity to eventually, at some point, have home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So if they can get this victory and go 8-3 and hold the tiebreaker advantage over the Chicago Bears, that can go a long way in this team at least getting a bye, if not the top spot, getting that second spot and at least getting that bye. So, I mean, we'll definitely see what happens, but right now, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles and you're an Eagles fan, you got to be riding high and feeling good about the chances of this football team, especially the production you're getting from the defensive side of football.
Well, but Paul, I mean, I don't disagree that certainly if you're the Eagles, you're excited. But I mean, did they really play that good? They missed, like you mentioned in the onset. Well, here there's Avant drops a short touchdown in the end zone that against teams down the season, you gotta make those catches. Jason Avant's been in this league too long to miss that ball. It wasn't a stellar performance, in my opinion, by any means, by Vic. They got lucky late because on a big 4th-and-1, that run and play goes for a touchdown. That's a 50-yard run. And so, okay, big plays are what this offense is known for, but certainly not 50-yard runs. And so that's why I say I think maybe teams are starting to get, and you heard a lot during the broadcast about blitzing Michael Vick may prove to be a worthwhile gamble. And I saw a lot of Michael Vick where it did seem like he was harried, he was rushed, and he didn't seem like the Michael Vick. When you give him a lot of time, sure, he's able to pick you apart.
Well, any quarterback, if you give him a lot of time, can pick you apart. But in terms of that, I mean, the Giants have a very athletic and a very good front seven and a very good front four. O.C. Umanura, Justin Tuck, and those boys. So those guys are going to put pressure on you, and those guys can definitely get to the quarterback. And they're known for getting to the quarterback. And Justin Tuck actually had 3 sacks in that game. So that front line for the Giants is a very good front line. It's a front line that can harass you and a front line that can force you into a lot of turnovers and a lot of mistakes. I mean, the reality of it is you're not going to score 59 points every week. You're just not going to do it. It's not possible. It's not doable. And it just doesn't happen in this league. And so you want to see Michael Vick in a game like this, a game where it was kind of grinded out, a game that was close, a game that was nip and tuck throughout. You want to see him in that type of game, in that type of position where he has to make a play in order for this team to win, or somebody on the offensive side has to make a play in order for this team to win. And you want to see it. And look, the Giants are a good football team. They're 6-4 right now. They're a good football team. And they have a very good defense. They have a very good defense. I want to say they're first or second in defense, in total defense. So this is a team defensively that's very good. And you're not going to score 59 points against this defense, that Giants defense. There's no way you're going to score that many points against them. So I thought the Eagles played well, and I thought Michael Vick did enough to get the job done. We'll see if teams will duplicate what the Giants did. They forced Michael Vick to the right, and it seemed like he had some issues throwing to the right. As Chris Collinsworth pointed out throughout the broadcast, throughout the telecast, that if you send Michael Vick right, he's more apt to run than the pass. So, I mean, maybe teams will look and see, hey, this is a copycat league. So teams are going to see what they saw on the film, and they're going to try to duplicate what the Giants did. But most teams in the league do not have that type of front seven that the Giants have and the type of defense that the Giants have. So, I mean, it should be interesting. It should be interesting to see how Michael Vick adjusts. It should be interesting to see how the Eagles and Andy Reid and Marty Morningweg adjust.
Well, I think the adjustments are always going to be key for all of these teams. To me, Paul, like I said, don't get me wrong. Overall, this was a good showing for the Eagles. They beat a very big opponent for them. Probably, you know, their division rival, but it's not worry. This was certainly not their best performance, and I think you want to see better. You want to see more from them, or certainly, excuse me, I'm hoping to see more from them. I'm hoping that there is more, in bigger games like this. I think Vic, this is I think we're being, you know, maybe overly critical. It was a big game, but this was probably Vic's most average performance of what's been a stellar year. And I'm just I guess I'm a little worried because, to me, I think this goes back to what we talked about in the off season, which is, you know, this is a young team and there's really not a lot, you know, at one wrong move one way or the other, these games that they're winning, they could very easily be losing. I go back to being not impressed by Michael Vick, which I guess it's not a bad thing. It's maybe time that he has an average game, so we do recognize that he's just he's a human being like all of us, but by the same token, I guess I would have expected more from the players around him, with the exception of LeSean McCoy, who, you know, goes out on a big fourth and one and makes an unbelievable play. And but when you get the ball thrown at you and you're in the end zone and it hits you in the inch, you got to catch it. And if you really want to be a juggernaut in the come playoff time, that we can't be dropping those balls.
You're right. I mean, you definitely can't be dropping the ball, Jason Avant. And again, you're not going to see that very often. Jason Avant, probably the guy with the best hands on the team. So it's not something you're going to see a lot. But you talk about an average game for Michael Vick. He still managed to throw for 258 yards and ran for a touchdown. And so I wouldn't call that necessarily. And I guess it wasn't to, I mean, 83 quarterback rating. And, you know, this is a guy who's been over 100 in terms of quarterback rating more often than not throughout this whole season. But, again, Macklin stepped up 9 catches, 120 yards. He had a decent football game. And all in all, you're not expected to blow out the Giants. And the Giants are a team that came off a bad loss in Dallas. So you knew they were going to come out with some kind of spark and want to play one of their better games. Because, again, this was a divisional game. This is a tough, grinded-out game. But they're a team that just have turned it over a lot. And they turned it over again, too many times, 5 times against the Eagles in that football game. But I think and watching that game and looking at that game, you knew that wasn't going to be an easy football game. You didn't expect a blowout. At least I didn't expect a blowout. I expected the Giants and the Eagles to be a tough football game because that's the way they always are in the NFC. Those are the tough, grinded-out, physical football games, and that's exactly what you saw on Sunday night, and the Eagles did enough to get it done, and it's a game of inches. Definitely a game of inches, because if you watch that pitch play, O.C. Umeniora was very, very close to deflecting that football. But like I said, it's a game of inches, and they got it done on LeSean McCoy race 50 yards for the touchdown, and the Eagles went on to win that football game. And they're on top of the NFC East, and they are 7-3 right now. And if you look at this football team, I mean, they go to Chicago this week, which is going to be a tough one in Chicago. It's definitely going to be a tough game, but it's definitely an opportunity for this team right now to take control of this conference. They can get this victory, and if they can get it, this will go a long way in them making the playoffs, which I think they will anyway, and also go a long way for this team possibly getting that bye in the playoffs and ultimately getting a home playoff game in the divisional round. And if they're lucky, two home games in the divisional round in the NFC Championship game, if they're lucky and if they can get this thing right. But if you look at the NFC, you got the Eagles, you got the Bears, you got the Packers, all three of those teams 7-3. The Saints at 7-3, and he has the Falcons who lead the conference and who are 8-2, a team that the Eagles have beaten. So if they would tie that team, they would hold an advantage over that team. So they would definitely hold the tiebreaker because of their victory over the Falcons. So if you look at the NFC, there are at least, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe, and I forgot about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are also 7-3 as well. And a team that, I mean, I'm still having a hard time believing in, but each week they are finding ways to win, and they are 7-3. And again, they're going to be, I don't think they're going to be much of a factor, but again, that's a team that more than likely has a good shot to make the playoffs, definitely has a good shot to make the playoffs. The NFC is definitely going to be competitive, but like I said last week, I can't.
Well, I mean, you say they're going to be competitive, but you and I both know, and we're well aware. I mean, in all reality, too, Paul, the NFC, you know, Chicago's going to be a tough game. Chicago's got, you know, they have a really strong defense, but their offense is, I mean, let's keep it real. It's Chicago. They have an okay running game. The quarterback is sporadic. I mean, how far can they match up against? When you look at Peyton Manning and you look at what Tom Brady put together on Sunday, that's really where, you know, when you talk about talent in the NFL, that's where playoffs are going to be won and lost. And Chicago may have a great defense, but, I mean, you're not going to stop those offenses for four quarters.
And like you said, with Chicago, they have a very good defense. But there are opportunities with Jay Cutler as your starting quarterback, and there are opportunities for turnovers. So if you look at that, I mean, Jay Cutler is a guy that will put the ball, will throw the ball to the other team. And he's done it a lot this year. 10 interceptions, including 4 in one game to one guy, D'Angelo Hall. So,
it's going to get real tricky, I think, real soon. I mean, I'm telling you, I look at it, it's, you know, it's funny because we've yet to even see what if anything, Randy Moss means to a Titan offense that is just in complete disarray, a Titans team that just basically, they look like, you know, just put a fork in them because they're done. I mean, with the injuries and it's a certain, I mean, if you thought, I guess the beginning year, if everyone thought what's happening in Minnesota is comical, well, they no one really is paying attention, and lucky for Jeff Fisher, because even what comes out today of them now telling him to leave the, you know, the locker room for a team meeting, I kind of see the whole NFL season. This is one of these NFL seasons I think that, you know, are going to come along once in maybe in a blue moon, because it just is like, well, what's going to happen next? Where you know, who knows? Maybe Peyton Manning is going to retire, or they're going to somehow Patriots will trade Tom Brady, because what looked like a somewhat stable team or doing well, the Titans coming off of a bad season, they're looking horrible.
Well, that, and we can switch gears now to the Vince Young thing and the whole situation. I mean, there was a report, Vince, he hurt his thumb. he will have surgery, and he will be out for the year. He is placed on IR. I guess the issue between Jeff Fisher and, and Vince Young was Young, who hurt his game against, hurt his thumb against the Redskins, wanted to go back into the football game. Jeff Fisher believed that Vince Young could not effectively run the team with that injury, so he basically told Vince that he would not go back in. He put the rookie in, the rookie quarterback in, Rusty Smith. And Vince Young wasn't too happy, and apparently Vince Young threw his shoulder pads into the stands and gave his jersey into the stands and walked out of the locker room during Jeff Fisher's speech to the team, and basically told Jeff Fisher apparently that not walking out on the team, but he's walking out on him. So, I mean, it's been a frustrating season for Vince Young, and throughout the year, I mean, he had the situation where he's benched in the Steeler game for Terry Collins, and, you know, as a starting quarterback and a guy that, you know, apparently is the franchise quarterback, you don't want to get pulled from the game, and it's almost like the relationship between Jeff Fisher and Vince Young, it's pretty much a dead issue. These two cannot coexist, and more than likely Vince Young will be moved along. One of the two is going to be going next year. I think it's going to be Vince Young, and Vince Young probably will be moved on. But you look at
not according to Bud Adams, Paul. I mean, Bud Adams says, you know, very surely that don't worry, this is it's not going to happen.
Bud Adams is a big fan of Vince Young, and basically told Jeff Fisher to put Vince Young to install Vince Young as the starter last season when the team got off to a very bad start, 0-6 start. And almost got the Vince Young almost got the Titans to the playoffs that year, last year. But these two cannot coexist. I mean, Bud Adams is saying it now, but, you know, I just don't see how they can make this work. I mean, there's obviously distrust. Obviously, these two just don't get along at this stage of the game. And both of them, and they've basically proven it by some of the things that have been going on there. So, I mean, it should be interesting that, you know, especially now, with Vince Young being asked to leave the practice facility by Jeff Fisher. I mean, that's basically telling me and telling the world that, you know, at this point, Vince Young is not going to be a starter here as long as Jeff Fisher is the coach of this team. I mean, Bud Adams ultimately is the owner. And like I said before, Bud Adams loves Vince Young. So we'll see if those two can coexist and they can work this thing out. I have my doubts, and I also have my doubts about Vince Young as a starter in this league. Granted, he's had a winning record in this as a starter, and he's led his team to the playoffs, and he saved Jeff Fisher's job on two occasions. So this is a guy that has proven.
Well, Paul, but you look at when you look at Tennessee, when you go down like their team, take out a Vince Young, and here again, like blow the team up and start over. And so, if you're Jeff Fisher, realistically, I mean, certainly what he does, and Young has proven to be, I think, in his tenure with Tennessee to be volatile, to say the least. But this, again, is a coach who, in my opinion, the coach is not on the field. The best coach, any coach that thinks that they're better than their best player, sometimes really needs to look in the mirror. And remember, you better look at the team around you and really say, can this team win long-term with me, you know, as the best player? Because Tennessee, I mean, Kerry Collins, it's year to year. He's going to have a good year one year and a horrible year the next year. They have no one in the pipeline. Record-wise, they're nowhere near the bottom of the league unless they just tank the rest of the season. And they got a pretty good running back Chris Johnson, who will win you a couple of games. So it's not like they're that bad, but when you look at no quarterback, then why are you going to pay a franchise running back when you have no one around them? They go out and they sign receivers. Paul, Chris Johnson is arguably the best running back in the NFL. So please don't sit around. But without a quarterback, Chris Johnson becomes arguably the best, one of the best running backs in the league without a quarterback, which means you're not going to have numbers when you can't pass the ball.
Well, I mean, Chris Johnson is a guy who rushed over 2,000 yards last season and has had a great career and is definitely a great running back. But if you look at the Tennessee Titans team, as of right now, they are 5-5. One game behind the leaders in that division, which are the Jaguars and the Indianapolis Colts. So they're still right there. They're still there and still have an opportunity to make it to the playoffs and to even win that division. So in saying that, there's still an opportunity there for the Titans. But I think all in all, the whole Vince Young situation is not good for the team, but if you look at it, it's time for I think, one of these two parties to move on, whether that be Jeff Fisher or whether that be Vince Young. But ultimately, both of them will land somewhere in this league. But it looks like now it's time for both of these teams, to do something with one of these two guys and make a decision on one of these two guys, because it's very obvious to me. I guess it's not obvious to Bud Adams, the owner of the Titans, but it's obvious to me that these two cannot coexist, and these two will not coexist. And I just think that one of them has to go. I want to get your thoughts on who you think the best team in the NFC and the best team in the AFC is. I want to get your opinion on that. I mean, we're in week 10 of the season. A lot of parity in this league. A whole lot of parity here in the NFL right now. Whole lot of parity. I talked about the NFC, and I gave some of the teams there the records of some of the teams. Look at the AFC. 8-2 Jets. 8-2 Patriots. 7-3 Ravens. 7-3 Steelers. You have the Jacksonville. You have the Jaguars and the Colts at 6-4 and the Chiefs at 6-4. You got the San Diego Chargers at 5-5, but they're coming. And they're going to be a dangerous team, and they're a team that I don't think anybody would want to see in the playoffs, especially with that offense and Phillip Rivers at the helm. But if you look at the AFC right now, 8-2 New York, 8-2 New England, and then 7-3 Baltimore, 7-3 Pittsburgh. Those are four teams that you can make an argument for, or make an argument as the best team in that conference, and that's a team that could represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. Those four teams, the Jets, the Patriots, the Ravens, and the Steelers, those are some good football teams right there. An argument can be made that any one of those teams could make it to the Super Bowl. There is a lot of parity right now. That's four teams, and these are four good football teams, four solid football teams that I named here that could make it to the Super Bowl. And then you still have the Indianapolis Colts. I hear the injuries and everything. I hear, you know, a lot of injuries there in Indianapolis. And it's costing them, and they're struggling because of it. But anytime you have a guy like Peyton Manning on your side, you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity. So I wouldn't dismiss or discount this Colts team. But then you have the Jets right now, the cardiac Jets, Mark Sanchez and those boys. Mark Sanchez is a guy right now in the past couple weeks has been clutch, been very clutch these past couple weeks. But I still don't believe in him, and I believe in that defense. I love that defense in New York. But I don't believe in Mark Sanchez. And so I just think right now, if I want to look at the AFC, who I think the best team in the AFC is, I think it's the New England Patriots with Tom Brady. And granted, this is a team that defensively gives up points. They give up their points. But this is a team with Tom Brady at the helm that wanted the Pittsburgh and beat the Steelers 39-26. And with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick together, anything is possible. And I talked about it earlier.
Well,
I talked about in the offseason that how I felt that the New England Patriots were the best team in the AFCs. And I heard all this Jets talk, but as far as I'm concerned, with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick at the helm, this team always has an opportunity. And with Mark Sanchez as your quarterback in New England, in New York, I just feel like that the Patriots have a better situation quarterback-wise. And I just think the Patriots are the better football team and will win the AFCs. And they will win the AFCs, like I said, in the offseason.
Let's see what happens.
I said it before the season started. The best team in the AFC East was not the New York Jets, but the New England Patriots, the team that won that division last year. And the Jets were a team that snuck in last year.
Yeah, but you're just talking. You're talking, and that's great. The bottom line is we're not comparing Mark Sanchez in his second year to Tom Brady. I don't think anyone's going to do that.
Quarterback play gets it done in this league.
And what's wrong? What's been wrong with Sanchez's play, Paul?
Let's look at this sophomore season. He's had a very good season, Paul. You can't deny.
I'm not denying his past 3 weeks and what he's done. But if you look at the week before, if you look at week 8 against the Green Bay Packers, they were shut out at home by the Green Bay Packers. In these past 3 weeks, let's see. You beat the Detroit Lions. You're beating some sisters of the poor here. Detroit Lions 2-8. You beat them in overtime. Let's see. You beat the Cleveland Browns in overtime 26-20. Again, a great play by Mark Sanchez getting the ball to San Antonio Holmes and getting it done. But another little sister of the poor, 3-7. And again, this past week, you beat the Houston Texans 30-27. Hey, on some clutch plays by Mark Sanchez in that last drive. But another little sister of the poor at 4-6. So you got three little sisters of the poor they beat these past 3 weeks. And the last legitimate team that they played was the Green Bay Packers. And if you look at, let's look at their wins. If you look at it, okay, they beat the Patriots. It's a solid team, great team. Can't take anything away from them. But they beat the Dolphins, a team that is record-wise 5-5, 500. Not good, not great. Mediocre, 500. But you beat the Minnesota Vikings, who are 3-7 ball club. You beat the Denver Broncos, who are also 3-7. You face the Green Bay Packers at home and lose 9-0. And again, like I said before, you face the little sisters of the poor in Detroit, Cleveland, and Houston, and you beat them all on last drives. So the way I look at it, and the way I see it, I see 8-2. And I see a lot of talent on that Jets team. But you definitely have to be concerned. You have to look at who they have beat. And let's compare it to the Patriots, who the Patriots have beat. Your team in the New England Patriots, who have beaten the Baltimore Ravens, who have beaten the San Diego Chargers, who have beaten the Pittsburgh Steelers, and who have beaten the Indianapolis Colts. And they beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. They beat San Diego in San Diego. So this is a team that has beaten some solid, solid teams. I just think when it's all said and done, we're all hyped and we're all in love with this Jets team, mainly because of Hard Knocks, also because of Rex Ryan and his braggadocious style. But at the end of the day, we have to remember they're in New York City, media capital of the world. So at the end of the day, the way I look at it, Patriots at 8-2, Jets at 8-2, and I believe right now this New England Patriots team is the best team in the AFC.
Well, but Paul, my only question.
Two straight victories against the Steelers and the Colts.
Oh, my God.
And one of those games was in Pittsburgh. Best team in AFC is the New England Patriots. Defensively, I know they struggle, but they find a way to get it done. They beat two very good teams in these past 2 weeks.
Are you done yet?
Oh, I'm done.
Because the only question I have is, it's quite obvious that, again, you're making your feelings known about how you're not really a big New York fan, so you're going to be unrealistic because the Jets, Paul, are playing as good as football as anybody in the NFL, period. They're playing football. Yeah, are they? They're on a streak now, but they're doing offensively this year what defensively they did last year, which is defy some odds. But at the end of the day, they're still putting up good numbers. They're responsible and they're respectable numbers. And that's the thing. I'm not going to disagree. It certainly looks like the Patriots, you know, were well thought out in getting rid of Moss because they have had some answers. But, Paul, I mean, when you certainly look at the fact that, you know, they're also not a very deep team. And so we're still, you know, we're a little bit like 60% into this season. One injury to one of these players, and where are they going in terms of depth? They have no depth. If they're not able to stay healthy, if everything doesn't go just so, especially offensively for this team, there isn't a second or third option for them. So you're looking at it now.
I understand what you're saying, but with Bill Belichick,
I'm still not overly impressed. You could say you're impressed with the Pats. I'll tell you, Paul, they're playing average football. Last week, and if you really look at last week's game, the one big thing against Indianapolis. Other than Peyton Manning, did not really show up for that game. I mean, there were
But they did force Peyton Manning into three interceptions.
Okay, well,
I'm just saying.
He's a human being, Paul. You know, a man. You remember that song, right? One of your favorites.
I do. Very good song.
So let's keep it real.
But in keeping it real, I think I've done a great job of keeping it real, as you like to say, as they like to say sometimes in the streets. And keeping it real, I'm keeping it real with you. Three victories in last second, last drive fashion against three sisters, three little sisters of the poor.
But, Paul, I'm not going to disagree with
Detroit
you.
Detroit Lions, Cleveland Browns, Houston Texans. And they have another clean puff coming up against the Cincinnati Bengals this week on Thursday, Thanksgiving night. Little sisters of the poor. Last I checked, 2-8 in Detroit, 4-6 with the Texans, and 3-7 with the Cleveland Browns. They're not juggernaut teams, they're beat. They're not top-notch teams they're beating. They're not the Indianapolis Colts. And they're not the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're not.
But again, but Paul, my question is, how does all of that relate to the fact that, but how does it change their record?
How does it change their record?
It does. How is it changing? Okay. When it starts to change their record, then I think it's appropriate or then it's fair to chastise the Jets. But at this point, there's a win is still a win is still a win. I mean, weren't you one of the men that they came into to this league and franchised that phrase that a win is a win?
I mean, ultimately, a win is a win that is a win. And you're right. But don't come with this. You know, I don't get all excited over it. I mean, this is not something you get excited over.
Just because New York obviously has done you wrong. You know, there's still a lot of issues that you and your therapist are working through. Is it fair that you are putting that on this New York team that is playing well?
Three little sisters of the poor these past 3 weeks. And they all beat them in last second fashion.
So, Denny,
you could be a You can be impressed if you want to. I choose not to.
But, Paul, they have to play who's on their schedule, right? They have to play who's on their schedule, right?
Ultimately, you have to play who's on your schedule, and ultimately you have to beat.
I mean, they have an option to play anybody else, Paul? Do they have an option to play anyone else?
No, they don't. I mean, your schedule is what your schedule is. Your schedule is what your schedule is. And speaking of schedules, look at their schedule the rest of the way. They have Cincinnati. Week 13, they travel to New England. They lost. They have Miami at home. They travel to Pittsburgh. They lost. And they go up against Chicago and Buffalo to end the season.
Well, I mean, the prognosticator is in the house. So,
they got a couple opportunities against some bad teams again down the stretch. And we'll see what happens. But, other than New England, when they have stepped up in competition.
Again, New England
like
playing
against
the
Packers
on their schedule.
And like against the Packers.
My God.
When they stepped up in competition. I remember Dan Morgan, who was on this show a few weeks back, talking about this. He wanted to see Mark Sanchez up against the top-notch defense. And he saw we saw week one against the Ravens, and we know what happened there. We saw it against the Green Bay Packers, and we know what happened there. So, and we'll see it again against the Pittsburgh Steelers down the stretch, and I think we will know what will happen there as well. But let me give out the numbers. The number to call is 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. You can send email messages to the show at goforit.gan@gmail.com. That's goforit.gan@gmail.com. So let me know what you think. Best team in the AFC, best team in the NFC. As far as I'm concerned, the best team in the AFC are the New England Patriots. And the best team in the NFC, drum roll please, resides in the great state of Pennsylvania, in the beautiful city of Philadelphia. Your Philadelphia Eagles and Michael Vick and the Philadelphia Eagles, in my mind, are the best team in the NFC. And I believe this is a team, I never thought I would say this, never thought this would come to my mind, that there is a legitimate possibility that you can have a Super Bowl, that this team could go to the Super Bowl. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable to think that. Unbelievable to think that this could ever happen. But this is a team 7-3. 7-3. And a team that has beaten some fairly good ball clubs in Jacksonville, beating the Falcons, beating the Colts. And look at these last 3 weeks. You go to you have Indianapolis at home, you beat them. You travel to Washington. Say what you will, this is a Redskins team that is 500 at 5-5. And they also have the Giants at the link, and they beat the Giants as well. A very great 3 weeks for the Philadelphia Eagles. And last I checked, with Michael Vick as the starter, this team is 5-0. And so I just think right now, with the kind of play that they're getting from the defense, a defense that leads the league in interceptions, and a defense that is making teams turn the football over. If I look at this team and look at those statistics, I'm saying to myself, with the defensive play that they're getting and with the offensive play that they're getting from Michael Vick, that 7-3, I believe this is the best team in the NFC. Only thing that scares me, Michael Vick is taking a lot of hits. Too many hits.
That's not going to change. Michael Vick's not going to change it. You watched him. I watched him. He runs out of the pocket, and instead of sliding, he goes and gets head first and takes a pretty mean hit. Luckily, he gets bounces right back up. But it's pretty evident now, especially when Morning Leg and Reed come out and pretty much tell you the guy is not going to slide. He's probably going to get himself injured. down the line, you can't keep this up your whole career. I mean, Steve Young has been, I think, the most vocal journalist, so to speak, out there telling you this is not a very smart move. This is what will get a person injured. But
well,
for Michael Vick, it doesn't matter. He doesn't
know how to slide. He's been on the record saying it. He doesn't know how to do it. So what he's going to have to do is just get out of bounds. He's going to have to learn how to get out of bounds.
Right.
And sometimes it means not getting that extra yard or two and just stepping out of bounds. I mean, that's what's going to happen with Michael Vick. And you're right. You're right. And I think in saying that, you have to think about that in terms of long. You have to think about that long term. If you're Philadelphia Eagles, are you willing to invest in Michael Vick long term? Because this is a guy, again, who has proven that his style of play can definitely get you hurt. He got him hurt this earlier in the year with the ribs. It definitely could get him hurt again. So that's something the Eagles team has to think about down the line as they move on, not only with this season, but next season and beyond, if they are thinking about possibly re-signing this guy. So in saying all that, I still believe that ultimately, when it's all said and done, as we're speaking today, I think the best team in the NFC is the Philadelphia Eagles. And that's just the way I feel right now, especially with the type of play they're getting defensively. They're getting
the
great play
is,
defensively.
You know, and the funny thing is, Paul, and we're maybe switching gears a little bit too again, it's interesting how many people, and I mean, you and I both know this, we had on the airways, and we were open and candid and talking about Brett Favre all off season, and here now you have a guy who on a team who's the main reason that they are where they are, and I look at, I mean, I hear some of these players' comments, and I know everyone is wanting to make a big situation with the head coach and Childress, but when you look at who may have quit or didn't quit on this team, to me, I think what Brett Favre brought to them all season long, when you hear some of these players' comments, I have to believe some of them are also speaking, you know, as much as they're angry with Childress, they have to be angry with the play and the mindset of a Brett Favre who's sitting there in these press conferences and talking about himself, or talking about the players and how things are going right, but is doing really nothing to fix things.
Right, and we'll get to Favre for a second. Let's take a quick call, then I'll talk about Favre. Hello, you don't go for it.
Good evening, gentlemen.
I was calling, I wanted to, I was sort of thinking when
you're talking about Vic and you know how he's prone to injury, and I think that anybody that plays the way that Vic plays, you know, all or nothing, and as hard as he plays, no matter what position you play, you're prone to get hurt. But that's something that you take with a Michael Vick. And the other thing I want to comment on is the fact that he's not only giving him a chance to win, but the main thing that he's doing is he's not turning the ball over. Obviously, we know he doesn't have any interceptions to the point, and he just made his first turnover last Sunday night with the fumble. But, I mean, we're so used to number five, you know, throwing those random balls out at the end of the game and blowing it at the end of the fourth quarter when they're going to try to win the game. And that's just one thing that you don't see Michael Vick do. He doesn't force those ill-advised throws, so to speak, and them stupid, just horrible throws, and then walk off the field with a smile on his face.
Well, you're talking about five, meaning for five NFC title games with Donovan McNabb. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
But I mean, this is not about Donovan McNabb. This is about Michael Vick. And you're right. I mean, the guy has not turned the football over. He turned it over once, and he did actually fumble twice in that game. Luckily, the Eagles recovered. But you're right. I mean, he hasn't turned the football over. He's playing some great, great football. But in terms of the reckless style and the reckless play that the reckless abandoned style that he plays with, I think at some point you're going to have to, if you're Michael Vick and
you're going to have to try to limit that. I mean, and
I think you have to limit it, but I don't think that you have to guy to change the way that he plays the game. That's the way that he's played the game since college.
But I think he's going to have to change if he wants to last. If he wants to last, it's like he's getting older. I heard him talk about today, now he's getting older, he can't take the type of hits. And he is acknowledging that he can't continue to play this way. But he continues to play this way, and hopefully, as the season progresses, as his career progresses, that he will not take those big hits. Because you can't take those type of big hits.
One more quick question for you. I wanted to see with all your connections if you heard anything, but so from what I'm hearing, Tony Dungy's not interested in the position in Minnesota, and I don't know if you heard anything on that or not.
I have not heard anything on that, but, I mean, if you look at the Minnesota situation, they do need a quarterback. I mean, a quarterback, a coach. And maybe Tony Dungy would be the guy there, but we'll see if he ever comes out of retirement. I doubt if he does for that job. But, again, stranger things have happened, and you just don't know. But we thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And speaking of Tony Dungy, and speaking of Minnesota Vikings that you were bringing up before we brought the call on, if you look at the situation in Minnesota, it was a no-win situation for Brad Childress. I mean, if the whole organization had to bow to Brett Favre and bow to the streak and bow to him not coming to training camp, I mean, they just had to bow. Essentially, they had to hand the keys of the franchise to the guy, and he became the coach of that team in a lot of ways. But it's funny. I mean, Brad Childress, I mean, he didn't have a lot of options there. And you can't sit a Brett Favre down, mainly because of the streak. And also, he's just a legend. You can't sit the guy down. If you sit him down, you get vilified there. And if you keep him playing, you get vilified there. So it was a catch-22. It's darned if you do and darned if you don't. It wasn't a good situation for Brad Childress, and it wasn't a winning situation for Brad Childress. And we talked about this. We talked about this summer. We believed that Brett Favre and the Minnesota Vikings would take that step back. I didn't expect them to take this far of a step back, but we believed and said that they would take this step back. At some point, Brett Favre would start acting his age. And I say that I've said that a lot this season. I've said that a lot this season. And at some point, Brett Favre would start acting his age. And he acted it. He's acting it. Final. It is no shame to that. I mean, the man is 41 years old. This is a young man's game. You can't do this forever. You can't play at a high level. I mean, let's be honest. Brett Favre played out of his mind last year. I mean, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
And the other thing that we know, and the other thing that, again, you know, a lot of people don't want to be honest about is the recognition that, you know, in the NFL, if you're not in the off season working as hard in the off season as you are during the season, you can't play forever. And that's where I always go back to Favre, and that's what I kept saying was, I think last year, when you look at it, he really had something to prove. It was important for him. This year, he went into this whole thing like he does every other time that he tried to make these comebacks. He went into it like it was a reality show. And when he went to the Jets, where it was a lot of pomp, a lot of circumstance, but there wasn't a lot of just getting in and getting the job done. And this season, to me as well, this is where Favre comes in. He's probably injured, and it's more of an ego thing than it was right. If he had any brains, he may have taken a game or two off and ended his streak that still was phenomenal, but not ultimately that important. But certainly not for Brett Favre.
And at this stage of the game, as far as I'm concerned, it's only about the streak. I mean, you're 3-7 right now. I mean, again, you still can win 9 ball games, I guess. But judging by the way they played and judging by the way Brett Favre has played, 10 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. So he's turned the ball over at an alarming rate. The defense is not stopping people the way they did last year. And it's a struggle. It's definitely a struggle now. But, I mean, ultimately somebody has to take the fall. You can't fire all the players, so you got to fire the coach. But and the way they played the past 2 weeks, I mean, they haven't played great. and they were blown out this week against the Packers. And ironically enough, this Packer team was the one that blew out the Cowboys and ultimately led to the dismissal of Wade Phillips. So this Packers team is are definitely coach killers. They are coach killers. So, I mean, these past 2 weeks, they've gotten rid of Brad Childress, and they've gotten rid of Wade Phillips. So, ironically enough, but, I mean, if you look at it again, it was not a win, it was a no-win situation for Brad Childress in my mind. It really was. I mean, you can't sit Brett Favre down, obviously, and so you're stuck with him. And granted, Brett Favre is the reason that they got to the NFC title game last year. No doubt about it. I mean, the man played great, great, great football. But you had the situation this year with the ankle, but you also had the situation with Sidney Rice being down. And then you bring in Randy Moss. That doesn't work out. You waive him. And then it's been a team that's been in turmoil the whole year. You had the situation with Jens Serger and Favre in that hole a little bit. And you had all these distractions throughout the whole year. And it's just this team just struggled throughout. And ultimately, the struggle led to the dismissal of Brad Childress and has led to this team being 3-7, and a team that is going nowhere fast. But again, Brett Favre, Wilkins will start next week, and the streak is alive and well. Maybe Brett Favre would have benefited. Maybe he would have benefited from a week off.
It was interesting, guys, listening to Ed Werder on SportsCenter, and I'm laughing. I'm sitting here thinking, I'm laughing. Like, and they said, like, you know, he will play. Ed Werder says this man will play strictly because of the streak. And sure enough, you know, they announce he's going to start. And it's like he's going to play this whole season out and kill this organization all for a streak.
But I guess at this point now in your year, I mean, what more do you have to play for at this point? I mean,
what more do you have to play for, period?
But look, if you look at the NFC as a whole, like I said before, Eagles at 7-3, Falcons at 8-2, three teams in the NFC South at 7-3, and also the Bears and the Packers both at 7-3. So if you look at it, it's really not an opportunity in terms of playoffs that you can kind of almost forget about the playoffs at this point. The playoffs are a long shot at best at this point. So I'm looking at the situation. I'm saying to myself, maybe you do put a Tavares Jackson at this point, see what you have there, and maybe you can build for next year with him as your quarterback, or see if you want to build next year with him as your starting quarterback. So, I mean, that's the way I view that whole situation. I think if you're really serious about moving this, for progressing this thing, and seeing what you have in Tavares Jackson, I think you put him in at this point. And especially if you lose this week, I think you definitely have to put him in. You definitely have to put him in the following because there's no use to play with Brett Favre. But if you want to be about the streak, and I guess ultimately that would continue to put people in the stands just to see Brett Favre and see the last days of Brett Favre, I guess you continue to play Brett Favre, continue to play this thing out, and ultimately whatever happens, happens. And I think that's what essentially what's happened this year. Is, I mean, the guy has not played well, turned the ball over. And, again, 17 interceptions this year. I mean, he only had 7 interceptions the whole last season. Only seven interceptions the whole last year. Now he has 17 interceptions, and we're in week 12. So that tells you a lot about Brett Favre and a lot about the season that he has had to this point and the season that the Vikings have had to this point. But at 3-7, I'm thinking it might be in the best interest for the Minnesota Vikings to put in Tavares Jackson just to see what you have there and just to see what he can bring.
But you can't do it unless, you know, again, you won't be able to do this unless it's done abruptly. Like, now you're going to have to bench Favre. They should have, you know, I think the time, I don't disagree, it's now or never. It's insulting, I mean, in my opinion. If I'm these other players on this team, I can't see going into this week with Brett Favre knowing that for what. Like, so that at the end of the season, all these questions are going to come back. to the media and start haunting you again? What's the point of this?
Brett Favre is done after this year.
You don't know that, Paul.
You don't know.
I'll tell you what, I'll never say never with this guy.
Well, you can't, but he did say that he's not coming back. He said this is last year. He said it again, but he said it before. Said it numerous times. We all know the deal with this guy, but the way he's played this year, there's no way he can come back. But hey, anything's possible. Anything's possible. And, you know, just like a lot of people, a lot of athletes tend to be, Brett Favre's an attention whore. He loves attention. And this whole past two seasons has given him a lot of attention. He's definitely garnered a lot of attention. Will he or won't he? Let's go down and beg him. I mean, he's an attention whore, and, you know, I mean, he's getting the attention that he wants. The numbers to call the show, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/begin. That's blogtalkradio.com/begin. You can send email messages to the show at goforward.gan@gmail.com. That's goforward.gan@gmail.com. Expect us to be joined by former NFL linebacker, now UFL star, Ed Hartwell, who will talk about his career, talk about the UFL championship game that's coming up this Saturday on Versus Network at 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So it should be interesting to see what's going on with Ed. And last week we had Ed's wife on, Lisa Rue Hartwell. So it should be interesting to get Ed's take on Real Housewives of Atlanta, and also his take on what's going on with him and his comeback in football now that he's in the UFL. We're actually now being joined by former NFL linebacker and now UFL star linebacker, Ed Hartwell. Ed, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How about yourself, man?
Doing great, doing great. Now, Ed, you are in Omaha, Nebraska, preparing for the 2010 UFL Championship game. How are things in Omaha?
Hey, man, it's freezing down here, man. We just finished practice probably about an hour ago. And,
wow.
Man, my toes are still numb. But it's going good, though, man. We out there. We having fun. We getting ready, man. We hyped up. We saw the trophy. We actually took pictures and did media today. So it was a long day, but very productive.
Now, and for anyone that has not watched the UFL, tell them what they can expect in a UFL game.
Oh, man, you can expect everything you see in the NFL, you can expect in the UFL. It's a lot of hard hitting. You have defenses going out there and really delivering blows to people. You have all offenses out there that's scoring points. Think about it. 90% of this league is ex-NFL players. That have had some time and have started and done some great things in the league. I mean, we have some Super Bowl champions to Pro Bowl players to all the way down the line. So it's 90% of the league that's been in the NFL. So to say that, I mean, it's great football.
Now, you retired from the NFL two seasons ago after getting cut by the Raiders. I mean, you essentially announced your retirement on the Real Housewives of Atlanta, and at the time you were only 30 years old. At that point, did you think that your career was really over?
Well, you know what? At the time, I took an injury a couple years before that, and I tried to play on it and just wouldn't heal up. I never really had time to really rest it. And when I said that, I didn't know if it was going to heal, but what I was really doing is I was just going to rehab it and see if I can get it back. And the year was up, my knee was feeling great, and then, you know, I got the opportunity, I got that call from some of the coaches asking me, do I want to come back and play, and I said, hey, why not? So, here I am.
Now, are you 100% at this point?
Oh, yeah, man, you got to tell me, have you been watching the UFL?
I've been watching a little, I've been watching.
Paul, he brings up an interesting point, and you have mentioned 90% of the UFL is comprised of former NFL players, and being in both leagues, is this a long-term viable option
for players? Is this a tunnel either to the NFL or a road back to the NFL coming off of injuries or being away from the game for a while? Is this league long-term viable?
You know what? I believe it is. You know, it's a lot of players that good players that have been injured that's now in this league and playing and reproving themselves. And you have a lot of young guys who didn't make that cut, but they're still good players that's here, that 10% that are first-year guys coming straight out of college. And they didn't make that cut in the NFL, but they're making that cut now, and they're getting that look, and they play well. But last year, the first year of this league, actually about 46 guys went back to the league. That's unbelievable for the first year of startup league, for any league outside the NFL. So I definitely believe that it's going to be great. It's a great opportunity for people that are trying to get back, for people that missed that shot but still want to play football and still get that great look to go into the NFL.
What has this league done, I mean, for Ed Hartwell coming back? I mean, what has it done for you?
Well, you know, for me, you know, football has always been a first love for me. So it gave me the opportunity to come back now and to play at a high level and play against guys that played against the league. This week in the championship, we're playing Dominique Rhodes. And, you know, I played them guys when he was in India and I was in Baltimore. And so you get to come back and play great football, but at the same time, hey, if you go, you got to let the chips lie where they lay, you know. So it gives you the opportunity. Opportunity comes, you take it. But in a long haul, you definitely got to put it on film, though. So as long as you're playing well, you give yourself that second shot.
And is that the ultimate goal for you, at ultimately another shot at the NFL?
Well, you know what? That's never something that you're turned down. But at the same time, I do have some other things going on. You know, I'm just getting into my acting career. I want to do some fitness stuff and stuff like that. So I do have some things that's going on. But, hey, you never know. You know, they call. Hey, I'm healthy now, so I'll be ready.
And speaking of the acting thing, Ed, you recently appeared on Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns. How has that transition been going for you, going from an athlete to an actor?
Oh, man, it's great. You know, the good thing about it is that when I was younger, I said I always wanted to play football and I always wanted to be in a movie or on a sitcom, be an actor. So they both kind of come true. So I played football, actually still playing, and I'm getting roles, and I've done stage plays where I was the lead in two different stage plays, and other opportunities come around with helping out with commercials and doing commercials and stuff like that. So it's a great opportunity. It's fun. I mean, the best thing about having fun doing something, if you're working and having fun, it's not really work.
Right. And did you prepare yourself as your career went on for these acting roles? Did you take, like, classes and things of that nature?
Well, definitely. Before I ever took my first role, I was actually going to class for about 4 or 5 years before I started. This is my first year really working as an actor, but actually I've been taking classes 5 years before that and still plan to continue taking classes because you always want to become better and better. You know, I take that same football mentality and put it into that arena, and that's how, you know, you go forth to try to be successful.
And a funny thing, I mean, you actually are playing opposite your wife in the movie. The movie is Molding the Gwendolyn Mason Story. How was it being on the set with your wife, Lisa?
Well, you know, it was fun. You know, and the thing about it is when you're acting, you play different characters. And some people are like, well, they already married. But at the same time, you still have to pull that scene off.
Right.
And it was good. I mean, my wife, I think she's a wonderful actress. And so when we did the scene, it was a lot of people that were shooting it were saying that they was kind of amazed at how believable that was. And actually, the lady whose life story is about actually cried because she said a lot of the things that she took her back to that moment. And
right.
If you can go back in that moment, then you're really doing something. If it really, he felt unbelievable. A couple of times she walked out crying because it touched her that much. She just popped back in her head. because he's going to pay for it.
Is acting a good outlet for you in terms of getting away from the game? Is this like, it's more? It seems like it's more than a hobby. It's becoming another career. But has it transitioned for you to get you away from the game week to week?
Well, you know what? It definitely. I'm not just doing it as a hobby. I definitely want to make it into a second career. But the truth of the matter is, you can only play football so long. It's a short career. Do you love any football player? Love playing? Yeah, but honestly, how many? I mean, what's the most? Some people play for what, 10, 15? The average is a year and a half.
Right.
Career. So you try to beat the odds. I've beaten the odds. I've played for more than a year, a lot longer than a year and a half. But honestly, you definitely still have to have that second career that you can fall back on, that you can work for the rest of your life.
And Ed, we talked to your wife Lisa last week on the show, and she's gained a lot of popularity from Real Housewives of Atlanta. Do you find now that you're getting noticed more for being on that show than what you did on the football field?
Well, you know what? We laugh about it all the time because it depends. For football fans, people that like football, they know me for Ed Hartwell, the football player. But for people that don't really watch the football and watch the Real Housewives of Atlanta, now I'm Ed Hartwell on the Real Housewives of Atlanta. So it's kind of like a 50-50 thing. It depends on if they really watch football or if they don't.
So I got to know, Ed, which one do you want to be known as?
Well, you know what? I'm kind of cool with both because I did both. So you stamp your name on both of them. So it's kind of like you can't really choose one over the other because you actually participated. I was a football player, and I actually was in the show with my wife. So it's kind of, you can't take it away from either one of them.
Now, did you enjoy being on the Real Housewives of Atlanta?
Well, you know what? It has good times, but, you know, it's sometimes it's a little little intrusive, a little, you see me sometimes in the background shaking my head like, I can't believe she just said that. You know, but overall, I think it's a very entertaining show. It has the ratings to prove it. You know, a lot of people watch it, millions and millions of people watch it, so you have to take your hat off to Bravo. I mean, they put together a great show.
And at times it did kind of seem like you were a little uncomfortable. Having all the cameras in your house and your face 24/7, did that get annoying after a while?
I think the first season it did, because they were there for a long periods of time. But after a while, especially near the end of the first season, going to the second season, taping someone in the third season, you kind of get used to it. But what I did was, instead of just thinking of it as being annoying coming down the line, so I might as well learn from it. So if you see me in front of the camera, you might as well learn what's going on behind the camera. So when I wasn't taping, I would be back there asking questions, saying, okay, well, how are they getting this shot, how are they getting that shot? Because the more you know, the better off you are.
We're talking to Ed Hartwell, former NFL linebacker, now UFL star linebacker for the Las Vegas Locomotives, who are preparing for their game against the Florida Tuskers in the UFL championship game in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, Ed, well, I want to go to the NFL for a second. You were a guy who played with Michael Vick with the Atlanta Falcons, and right now Michael Vick has turned things around for himself and for the Philadelphia Eagles. Looking at Michael Vick now and thinking about the Michael Vick that you played with, how different is this guy on the football field?
Oh, man. You know what? Honestly, I actually just had this conversation while watching the game with a couple teammates the other day. And you can look in his eyes and his focus is different. Not to say that he's just a better athlete, because he's already been a great athlete. Now he has a couple more weapons around him. He has an offensive line that's holding the pocket a little longer than what he used to have. So he don't have to run as much. He can sit there and he can pass on a dime. He's doing film. He's doing a lot more film study now. So he's trying to become that all around great athlete that everybody knows that he can be, and he's doing it. He's doing a heck of a job. He has my vote for MVP of this league so far.
Are you surprised by what you've seen?
Not at all, but playing with him, I mean, things that I've seen him do in practice that people hasn't seen him doing games, so I always knew he had it.
Well, you were a guy. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say this is the guy that always has these guys' skills, but you're saying you're not surprised at his play on this Eagles team. I guess, like, were you surprised that he was able to get back to this level of Michael Vick this soon?
You know what? When you have it in you, all you have to do, all you need is a couple games to knock the rust. It's like riding a bike. You jump back on a bike, you ride a little bit, you knock the rust off, and down the street you go. He set out a year, came back, knocked the dust off, and here we go. he's back on the bike and he's riding. So with being a player that played in this game at the high levels, I'm not really surprised that he came back so fast, because he's a great player, and you just don't lose that. It's a gift that God gave you from above, and you know all you have to do is just knock the rust off and keep going. That's what he did. Now he's doing a wonderful job in the league and opening up a lot of eyes, even more so than he was before he left.
Tom, do you still keep in contact with some of the guys in the league?
Oh, definitely. I still keep in touch with a lot of guys, and real close to a lot of guys there, and keep in touch and have fun. So. Great guys. I go out and I watch games. One of my closest friends is Bart Scott. I go out and watch Jet games here and there, support him. And then, so you keep in touch with those guys.
And speaking of Bart Scott and New York Jets, we actually had a little discussion earlier in the show. We talked about the Jets and the Patriots. I'm one who believes that Mark Sanchez will be the reason that the New York Jets will not make it to the Super Bowl. How do you see your Jets in terms of their opportunity to make the Super Bowl? Do you think they'll be there?
You know what? I think they have all the tools to be there. Now, football is a funny game, so will I say they definitely will be there? I can't tell you that. But what I can say is that they have all the tools to be there. They have a defense that's out there and that's dominating right now. They have receivers. They have a quarterback. They have running backs. They have line that's blocking. They have the tools to get there. So right now, they're doing pretty good. I mean, they're hard to beat right now. And although they are winning at the end of the game, but the game is four quarters long, and whoever wins when that buzzer goes off, that's who wins the football game, and they're getting it done.
And when we talk about this, they are getting it done, but they are getting it done in last-second fashion against three little sisters of the poor with the Browns, the Lions, and the Houston Texans. But, I mean, they're getting it done. You're right. But I happen to believe that the New England Patriots with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are the team that's going to get out the AFC and ultimately win that division.
Okay. So you predicting the Patriots to win the Super Bowl?
I'm predicting the Patriots to at least win the division. And ultimately, yes, I am predicting them to win.
Paul, that's not what he – Paul, that's not – let me help you.
No, I'm predicting the Patriots
that's not
to win
what
the Super
he asked
Bowl,
you,
yeah.
Paul. Did you not hear him?
That's exactly what he asked. He asked me if I'm predicting New England Patriots to go to the Super Bowl, and I'm saying yes, I predict them to win the division. Ultimately, yes, I predict them to win the Super Bowl and go to the Super Bowl.
So you saying, you know, I'm playing on this Vegas team, so you'll go down to a casino in Vegas and bet the house on the Patriots
now right
now.
Now you don't know this guy that well. Let me tell you something. If it comes from him and separating his money, you can't pry money out of his hands, and you're an NFL player. I'm going to tell you right now, you couldn't get the money out of his hands. That's how strong his grip is on the money.
Ed, I'll use some of your money.
Hey, no, I don't believe in the Patriots like that, so you're on your own with that one.
Who do you believe in? Hearing you talk about the Jets, I get the sense that you believe in that team in New York.
You know what? I think the Jets is a great team, you know, right now. I mean, they're putting it on the field. However they win, they're winning, and that's all that counts. There's other teams. You know, I like the Eagles, and there's a lot of other teams out there that I like, you know. So usually when you play, you kind of just like the team that you play for, but it's – a lot of teams that I like to watch.
And your Atlanta Falcons team, your former team, the Atlanta Falcons, are actually 8-2 and on top of the NFC. How do you feel about the Falcons?
I think they're doing pretty good. You know, you have to give it to them. Like I say, when they win in football games, you can't take anything away from them. They're 8-2. If they win, what, 3 more games, they're probably going to win their division. And now they're going to the playoffs. So you can't take that from them.
And that your team, the Las Vegas Locomotives, like I said before, will be playing in the UFL championship game against the Florida Tuskers in Omaha, Nebraska, at Rosenblatt Stadium this Saturday, 12 o'clock. We'll air on the Versus Network. This is actually a rematch of the 2009 championship game. And looking at this game, what can we expect from the Locomotives here?
Well, Locomotives, we come out and we play hard every game. I mean, we're that team in this whole UFL league that we're smash mouth. Our defense, we're going to come out, we're going to hit you in the mouth, which is great. This kind of defense that I like. You know, you have so many good players at all kind of different positions that no matter where you run, no matter where you throw it, you're going to feel it. And that's the type of defense you want to play for. You want people to think about, do I really want to run this ball? Do I really want to catch the ball? So that's what you can expect. That's smash mouth football from the Locomotives to go out there. And at the end of the game, it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out, heavyweight fight.
So are you willing to give us a prediction for this Saturday yet?
Well, you can never predict, but I'm just going to say, I mean, that's the goal. That's the ultimate goal, to go out there and win. And nobody that loves playing this game, that plays on any team, goes out there saying, well, you know, we might lose. That's not how we think. We always think we're going to win.
So judging from what you're saying, I think you believe the Locomotives will walk away with their second consecutive UFL championship.
Hey, see, I'm going to let you say that, not me. But I think that's a good possibility.
and that you're coached by Jim Fossil, who coached the Giants and actually led them to the Super Bowl. And Fossil was on the staff in Baltimore with Brian Billick when you were there in Baltimore. So how has it been playing for Jim Fossil?
Oh, man, he's a great coach, man. He take care of us. He put the pads on when we need the pads on. We pull them off when we need to pull them off. You can't ask, he's a player's coach. You know, you can talk to him about anything that's going on. He'll help you to the best of his ability. So it's a wonderful playing for a coach like that, you know, that's personable, that, you know, still puts his foot down, but at the same time, understand the players because he's a player himself, and do anything he can to help you succeed in this league, not only in this league, but get into the next league.
Right. And you talked about earlier about your fitness calendar. Tell us a little more about it.
Well, actually, it started off, I was talking, you know, I have a 501c3, I have a foundation called the Big Heart Foundation. And I'm getting ready to do some fitness stuff for kids, also some childhood obesity programming. And I said, well, you know, how, I was trying to think of different ways to actually make money in order to do the programming. And it came up to do a calendar. So and the first was a joke, but I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. So I did the fitness calendar, and now it's out. You know, you can go to edhartwood.com and get it. And that actually helps fund programming for that I'm doing with the kids.
And how have your teammates taken to this calendar?
Well, you know what, they tried to crack jokes, but then I told them to take their shirt off and let me see if they look as good as I look on the calendar, and nobody did. So that was a wrap.
Well, at 2010 is about to end, and maybe I can get my body right. Maybe 2012, you can see me a part of your calendar.
Hey, I'm telling you, and I'm definitely. A lot of people was asking about starting a boot camp, so I'm thinking about going ahead and starting it in January, and work with some after the season is over. Just work with a group of people just to do it, just because a lot of people asked me about it. Like, you ever do boot camps? And I would say no. And I'm like, okay. Maybe I'll do one, but it'd be a very strict boot camp. So I'm still trying to see how I can put that together in the time frame of everything else that I'm doing. But it'd be good. You should come to that.
Well, man, I'm in Pennsylvania, so more likely that's probably going to be in Atlanta, right?
Hey, that's all right. I might fly out to Pennsylvania one time and do a weekend thing down there, but it's gonna be tough now.
Remote.
Then we'll get there, Ed. You know, I mean, I'm a little overweight at this point, and I got to get my sexy back. So I definitely want to be a part of the Ed Hartwell boot camp.
Pray for him, Ed. As all, listen, there's nothing more you need to say. At some point, you need prayer. You know, it helps us. Pray for this man. Don't feed into it, because it just grows. It's like a weed.
Now, Ed, ultimately, I mean, you want to definitely win this championship on Saturday. But in terms of next year and beyond, obviously you would like to go back to the NFL. You would like to play in the NFL. But do you see that happening for yourself?
Well, you know what, a guy like what I do is I don't really just be like, well, I definitely, that's all I want to do. I have, like I said, I have the acting going on. I'm getting into the fitness thing where I'm doing, getting ready to do some DVDs and talking about doing a boot camp and all kind of other stuff that I definitely still want to do, even if I do go back and play. So I kind of just leave that to the man upstairs and say, hey, I went out, I played 8 strong games, I made it to the championship, led my team in tackles for the season, you know, and so you kind of got to put it in the man's hand because you never know. You can only control what you can control. So if it happens, great. I mean, it's wonderful. I can still do other things and that. But if it don't, you know, you got to move on and you got to keep playing. I know I definitely have an open arms to come back here and play next year. So, you know, it's kind of like if you still want to play, you play, and then you go and you still have other stuff that you have going on.
And so, you talked about earlier how you saw the trophy and everything. How much would this championship really mean to you?
Oh, man, it means a lot. Anytime you make it to a championship game, I don't care if you're in Little League or in high school, in college, in a professional league, it means something to you, and you'll remember that for the rest of your life. The ring you get, you'll have it. Even if you lose it, you have those memories. And those memories last a lifetime. I still remember, you remember winning them and you remember losing them. I remember losing the state championship after going undefeated the whole season. You know, you remember that for the rest of your life. When you know in your heart it should have been a victory, but things didn't go right. A couple of mistakes here and there, lost the game by 3 points. Hey, but you remember that for the rest of your life. So this game right here, everybody's playing will remember it for the rest of their life. And you want to take a great memory instead of a bad memory with you for the rest of your life.
And where can we find out information about Ed Hartwell in terms of his acting roles and his charities?
Well, right now you can go to edhartwell.com. Still a couple things on there. I'm finishing up. But go on there and I have stuff posted. You can go, if you follow me on Twitter, edhartwell1. And, you know, Facebook is just it. I actually have to create another Facebook. I'm full, so what? I'm going to do that pretty soon.
Ed Hartwell, we wish you nothing but the best of luck this upcoming Saturday in the game. It's the USFL championship. I keep wanting to say USFL, but the UFL championship game, the Las Vegas Locomotives against the Florida Tuskers in Omaha, Nebraska at Rosenblatt Stadium this Saturday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Versus Network. It's a big opportunity for you, Ed. I hope you get it done for you. I hope you get it done, sir. And we definitely appreciate you stopping by.
Hey, no problem. Appreciate you having me on.
Take care, Ed.
You too.
Ed Hartwell, UFL linebacker, Las Vegas Locomotives in the big championship game this upcoming Saturday. Again, it will air on the Versus Network at 12 o'clock p.m. I want to thank Ed Hartwell for stopping by today. It was great to hear and get his take on the UFL and what's going on with him now. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other shows. Again, we want to thank Ed Hartwell for stopping by. You can check out Ed Hartwell at edhartwell.com. where you can check out some of his acting and some of his charities. Well, I think everybody listen, everybody who's on.
nothing. It's a ball game.